Today is February 6th, 2013, and we will begin the seventh mitzvah that is listed here as, here on our handouts on page 14, it's listed as Shalei le'echol ha-pesach noh u'mavushal, not to eat the Pesach raw or mavushal or cooked. Rather, it should be eaten tzli eish. Should be eaten as tzli, as roasted. So now, what is the purpose of this? So here we have, again, we're on page 14, yes? The first quote here is from the Ibn Ezra. First of all, the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Al teichlu mimenu na, do not eat it raw, ubashal mavushal b'mayim, or if it's cooked in water. Kiim tzliyish, rather it should be done roasted." Now, that's kind of interesting. Like, why they eat it? How you prepare it? Who cares? So the Ibn Ezra says like this: the reason for chipazain, it should be eaten. Chipazin should be eaten while we're ready. That we shouldn't linger. V'yamaru lo'eichlo lefnei bay rega hamashchis. And you should eat it before the time that the mashchis comes. And therefore, since there was a time-sensitive consideration here that it should be done, it should be eaten before the mashchis comes, before the destructive angel comes. And as we spoke at length, that the schus of this mitzvah, the great schus of this mitzvah and everything that it represented of eating the Korban Pesach, was important for it to be done before the mashchis came. So we have the schus, we have the merit of this mitzvah. Now that being the case, therefore the Rabbi Shalom said, Alkein siva Hashem liyosei tzli eish lehizbashal mehira. Therefore, the Rebbe Shem says, roast it. Why? What's this reason? A very practical one. Since we needed to be finished eating the Korban Pesach by the time the mashlis came, which was at, what time did the mashlis come? At chatzais, at midnight. Very good. So till this very day, that's why we, as we mentioned earlier, the Afikaimen represents the Korban Pesach, we try to finish before Chatzais, and therefore, here too, being that we had to finish the Pesach before Chatzais, it was important to try to cook it or roast it as quick as possible, so that people shouldn't be busy with the preparations, basting it and putting things on it, and I'm going to cook it like this, I'm a gourmet chef, I'm going to, right, all sorts of, no, do it as quick as you can. Fine. Then we have another quote here from the Maisha of Zkenim. It goes on to the second column here. It's underlined. The purpose is, Kadeshi Arichu HaMitzriyim Reach Toyev Asem. Many of the Rishonim say this, that the purpose was roasting, because if you cook it, okay, the mist goes out, but people don't necessarily smell it very, very far away. You walk into the room, maybe you smell it, but when you roast something, you barbecue, it wafts far away, and people say, it smells good. In fact, we have a restaurant that moved in next door, and they're kind enough to provide us with that pleasant smell. Yeah. Probably not the healthiest thing, but maybe if we get them to sponsor the shear, the next time we'll announce them as a sponsor, and then we'll say, the smell is pleasant. Okay. Okay, so the point is that when you roast things, the smell goes far away, and the whole purpose, as we mentioned several times, the whole purpose of using specifically a tle, using this sheep, and showing that one idea was that we were sort of mocking Mitzrayim and their God, but also showing that we weren't riding a wave of we weren't jumping onto a bandwagon of excitement and power, that suddenly there was a Oh, now is Nisan. Nisan is the time for the sheep, is the mazel of the sheep. So, of course we got out of Mitzrayim because we manipulated the sheep, you know. No, we shecht the mazel of the time. We took the highest power that the people claimed was in existence at that time. In a sense it was, but obviously just endowed by the Rabbeinu Shalom with the strength to do so. But we took that which people were attributing the greatest degree of power at that time, and shechted that to show, no, there's something above everything else. If you take a lower form of a power, that may not necessarily show the greatness of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So that being the case, it was important. The publicity was very, very important. It was a marketing technique. Use roasting so that people will see. Now, the point is also, we'll see that other Rishonim say that was one of the reasons why the Rabbeinu Shalom told us to roast it while it was whole. Because again, when it's whole, it has the appearance of that kind of animal, and all the important messages that we were trying to convey to the Mitzrayim and to others, and even to Klal Yisrael itself, it should be done in a way where you actually, not just, oh, what meat is that? No, you actually saw the animal as is, and you had a greater. So again, and as much as there was a message there to be taught to other people, it was important, A, to do it in a way where the smell would travel, and this way more people would smell it, and as well to keep it whole so that people would see what kind of animal it is. Yes?
I had a question just came out of nowhere, but I think it's in the Negev. We were on the 49th degree of Tumah, and you know, we were serving idols. I mean, is it possible that we were bowing down the sheep and everything? And if that were the case, that would have been a real test for these people if they were that hospitable and attached to worshiping sheep.
Yeah, well, I don't know what degree the last fifth of Klal Yisrael that was left over after Makas Cheshech, to what degree they were involved in Avodah Zarah. It does say, Mishchu Kulachem, you should uproot yourself from Avodah Zarah. So even those that were actually bringing the Karban Pesach also had some degree of Avodah Zarah. To what degree were they actually serving? Were they just aiding? Were they just... Apparently there was a necessity to uproot it from their hearts in some degree and fashion. But I don't know the exact answer to your question. Right, and then the question is, if they were true of the Avodah Zarah, then why didn't they die during the... Right, it could be that they were just like, they were tainted with Avodah, you know, what degree is not clear. So, halal and halal of the Avodah Zarah. By the way, the people that were at Yam Suf were also the best of Mitzrayim, right? They were the ones that survived all the Makas, right? So, it says... The best, the psukim to this effect. Forget the lashon of the pasuk. Zevach rishayim tayeva. You have the tzedakah of a rasha. Also, you have a pasuk that says, I forget, it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it. But the tzedakah of a rasha is also is a bad thing. You know, don't do him any favors. Even your great righteous, you know, even the most righteous of the Egyptians all sorts of things. Anyway, there are many Maimari Chazal about this, that even the best of the Rishayim doesn't compare to the worst of the Tzadikim, or the lowest of the Tzadikim.
When you were saying that, I was thinking of what it says about Esau, about him doing good to you. You know, him obviously doing bad is, you know, stay away from him because of the bad that he can do to you, but also stay away from him when
he's, yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, it reminds me of a story. I'll tell you, it's a very, very powerful story and the lesson to take out of it. There was a woman about 10 years ago or so, on the 50th anniversary of the liberation of the Jewish people from the Nazis. I guess it was a little more than 10 years ago. But there was a woman that was brought in, a non-Jewish Polish woman, who was a righteous Gentile. She actually saved a family, a Jewish family. She hid them in her garage, in the attic of her garage, which her husband, her family, didn't even know that she was hiding them. Punishable by death, clearly, in a moment. She didn't even reveal it to her husband because she knew her husband would reveal it to the authorities, to the Gestapo, right? She hid a Jewish family there, and she bought food for them throughout. I don't know if it was, if it was in Poland, it must have been several years that she did this, and she did it at the risk of her own life, clearly. She would go to buy food while her husband was away at work, she would go to buy food at several different places, as she didn't want it to be recognizable that she was buying for a large, more than her own family, for a large group of people. So she would buy and she would go shopping in several different places. So on the when they survived the war, this family. So on the 50th anniversary of their liberation, they brought her in to come into New York and made a big party in her honor to thank her. So the truth is that what she did was an amazing thing at the risk of her life, etc. And I don't in any which way mean to minimize what she did. She did a really, really special thing, no question. But they gave her an interview. They asked her, what possessed you to do this, to risk your life and to save this Jewish family? And listen to what she said. She said, I'm very patriotic. She very much loved the motherland of Poland. And she's also very religious, and she believed in the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, there's a story of Sodom and Amora, and Avraham Avinu is davening to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and he says, if there are 10 tzaddikim, right, in the city, will you save them? And Hashem said yes. So she believed very profoundly that if there are 10 righteous people in a country or in a city, the Rebbeinu Shalom will save. She says, I looked around and I see such terrible cruelty, absolute barbaric cruelty on the part of not just the Nazis, my own people, the Polish people. So what's God going to do with that? Of course he's going to destroy us. So I held out a hope that if I act in a righteous way, that there might just be across Poland 9 other people that are doing the same thing and the country will be saved. Now, the person who told me over the story said like this, you can't minimize the greatness of what she did, absolutely. But there was some sensitivity there that he had when he heard the interview. He was bothered. And he said the following. He said, she never once mentioned that she did it because she felt compassion for this Jewish family. She knew it was the right thing to do, but she didn't say, let them die? Give them over to the authorities? She didn't say that. Her whole motive was simply to save the country. It says something about the person. She did a wonderful thing, not in any which way to minimize it, but there's a sensitivity there that one of the midas of a Talmud of Avraham Avinu is Rachmanim, the first, right? How could you? How could you let such a thing happen? It's a little bit of a different level of, so this is the most righteous of the whole Poland, still doesn't come to the real true sensitivity of the chesed and the rachamim of a ben Yisrael. Very important. And we're taught that we need to teach this to the world. There's a reason for it, because we do have that midah. In any case, we just brought up that idea of... everybody could learn from their surroundings, absolutely. So let's see. So the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says...
Where are you on the lines?
Yeah, I'm just trying to look at the words beforehand, maybe... Right, you should eat it very quickly. The Rambam speaks about the concept of eating a bechipazin. That's the reason that he gives that you shouldn't break a bone. One of the mitzvahs is not to break a bone. And the reason why you're not allowed to break a bone, the way the Rambam learns it, one of the reasons why you're not allowed to break a bone is because it's going to take too long. You know, part of it is breaking a bone, eating from it. Eat it the way it's usually eaten and don't go to great lengths. It has to be bechipazin and like... On high alert, ready to run. But then he, here where it's underlined, it says, V'hakavona haisa laharais hachipazin v'hamihirus. The whole purpose of all these mitzvahs is to show, not just that we should be on a high state of alert, but that we should be showing that we're on a high state of alert. K'dei shlo yis'acher echad mehem. If everybody's tense and everybody's on their toes, nobody's going to linger, no one's going to delay. We didn't want anybody to linger on in Mitzrayim and not go out at the exact time that everybody else was going out, and obviously it would lead to hezek, as the Rambam says. It would lead to damage. It would have hurt him. But in addition, there was some benefit, as we'll soon see. There was some benefit to showing that there was this, as we mentioned last time, there was this absolute turnaround from me'afela le'era, from absolute darkness to light, to show that we were still within the state of servitude, but there's going to be a one moment at which it totally flips over like that with a snap of the finger.
What the rush was, but I mean, they were told not to leave because Hashem, not to go out because Hashem was destroyed.
Right.
So if they're going to leave in the morning, what at that point is the rush? I mean, I can see, you know, if they were going to be leaving at that point.
Well, if a person's lingering, you know, and he's cooking his big sheep, you know, and he's got all sorts of, oh, I didn't get around. You know how people, especially Jewish people, push things off. Anyway, so there was this. But again, the Rambam is saying, practically, we didn't want to leave anybody behind. But besides for that, I'm mentioning that the other Mefarshim have been saying, that we've been learning, is that there was a purpose to showing, to displaying that chipazon. You know, till this very day, my father-in-law has a minig that he got from his father. And many people have this minig, where they take the matzah by the Pesach Seder, and they put it on their back, and they run showing, like, this is the way we left Mitzrayim. There's a certain message to be conveyed in describing the tenseness of the moment and the state of alert that we were in at the time. You know, when I was a kid, I don't know if it's an art scroll book or years ago, there was a book. It was very cute. I think it was like a book about a child. Obviously, it was a novel. That remained in Mitzrayim. I don't know if this is based on a medrash that had actually happened. I don't know. It's years and years and years ago. But the name of the book was called Shpeter. Shpeter in Yiddish means later. Maybe it was there as a kid's book, a lesson, you know, not to push things off. I don't remember. But the concept of not leaving somebody behind was very real, as you see from the Rambam. And that's the point. Hashem said, roast it as quick as possible. Get it done. Nobody should get distracted. No one should get, okay. In the Bechor Shor, we have a very similar idea. It says there, underlined, Kein derech b'nei adam hanechpazim, people who are in a rush, lo leches, people who are in a rush to go, sha'echol tzli, they eat things that are roasted. You know, when we go on trips, you know, one of the reasons why we always take a barbecue, besides for it's a little easier than cooking with a pot, is because it cooks much quicker. And you don't want to sit there in the park for 4 hours before you have to. As people are on the move and they need to eat, they're commonly roasting things. So again, they were on the move, and it was that's the way of people who are on the move. And the way to display that you're on the move is by way of cooking it, roasting it. The Chinuch adds, and again, that's underlined, is that it was the Derech B'nai Malachim. It was the way of royalty to eat things that were roasted. And he says, it's a good form of eating it, it's a good form of food, a preparation, and it's also very tasty. So that was another point, to point out the chairus, the freedom, the royalty that we were going to enter into. Okay, and therefore, you know, the Chinuch just adds that the things that we eat on the Seder night, of course, we're trying to commemorate it. We should definitely show Derech Cheirus Sorus, the way of true. But we eat leaning, and the things that we do a lot of things Derech Cheirus. What's that?
We still have to finish.
Yeah. Okay, so those are the Rishonim. If we go to page number 15, I know I'm going back and forth, but that's the way it was photocopied as one page. So in number 15, on page number 15, there's a large Zion at the beginning of the first column. And that, I underlined there, it says, Mitzvahs loisase, mem lamed saf, is mitzvahs loisase. The seventh mitzvah that's listed here is shalei lechol basar pesach. No, not to eat the pesach, either raw or cooked. And he goes through. Okay, now by number one, if you scoot down a little bit, he says like this: "V'asra ha'tayrak deisha lechol mavushul b'mayim." The Torah forbade us to eat it while it was cooked. Now we had a couple of reasons that it's the way of malachim, it's the way of people who are in a rush, etc. But he says no, there was something specific against the idea of cooking it in water. L'rames lebli lechol kedei lamalois tavasei. To show that it shouldn't be eaten simply to fulfill one's appetite. The people who give mishalim, the people who give, those who understand that water, well, there are other significances too, but in some ways water is symbolic of taiva, of inclination, of impulse. Where do we see that? When Reuven was cursed, it says pachaz kamayim. Your wrath, your hastiness is like water. So now what we're saying here is, and again we have to recognize that this was a mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people to bridge the gap between servitude and freedom. So there were lessons therein that were very, very important for the future. Hashem was sending us messages that we have to implant and emphasize for ourselves that we need to know for the future. So here he's saying, you're going to embark on eating. There's going to be a mitzvah to eat. Yeah? In fact, the Svarim say that the last mitzvah that we have today in Golos, that's left over, where there's a mitzvah... there are very few mitzvahs to actually eat the matzah. You actually eat the matzah. What they say about sukkah is that the beauty of the mitzvah of sukkah is that there's a mitzvah that you can actually go into the mitzvah. The mitzvah envelops you as opposed to you doing something right on the exterior. But in any case, the point here is that the Jewish people needed a lesson that you're going to now get a mitzvah, one of your first mitzvahs. And the mitzvah is to actually engage in a physical activity that you could indulge in. Now, it's kind of a strange thing. We've mentioned this in the past, that the nations of the world typically have a concept of serving the Ribbono Shel Olam or any deity, lahavdil alef havdalos, by way of doing spiritual things. They won't talk, they won't eat, refraining, abstinence. But they don't have a concept of using the physical world to elevate the physical world and to use that to serve Hashem, which is really what Hashem really, really, really wants. And it actually, it lends tremendous, tremendous beauty to the mitzvahs of the Torah. And that's something I mention to people all the time. If you ever meet somebody who's unaffiliated, the best thing you can say to them, in my opinion, one of the best things you can say to them, they'll say, why Judaism? Why more than any other religion? Or why should I consider it? And the answer is, any other religion, all the seemingly mundane things in life have very little significance. You're no different, as far as that's concerned, to an animal. Now, you could elevate yourself by foregoing those sort of indulgences and for the sake of a spiritual purpose, and that they understand, and that's a wonderful thing. But with Judaism, there's a step beyond that, which is far, far, far beyond that, really, and that is that you could actually take the mundane itself and make every little... So it's not just you're looking for spiritual opportunities. No, you could actually take everything you do, and make it... You could know the Ribbono Shel Olam in every single thing that you do. You should know the Ribbono Shel Olam, which means you could implant the Ribbono Shel Olam into every single thing that would seemingly be mundane and elevate it, which brings tremendous meaning to life. It really does. I tell this to people all the time. If you follow the Torah, you're going to bring tremendous meaning to tying your left shoe before your right shoe. I mean, come on, right? There's great significance. Why that? Why does it write first? And why is and the most of it, we don't even know how deep it is, right? We just know on the surface. But even what we do know, it brings tremendous significance even to the seemingly insignificant activities of life. So here we're saying that when the Jewish people were at the threshold of leaving Mitzrayim and embarking on a life of what we call Cherus, right? So Hashem is saying, by the way, you're not just going to be engaging in spiritual pursuits by absolute spirituality. Even the mundane things that you're going to be doing in your life, you should know, are going to be elevated. And here I'm giving you a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to eat. you're eating the Karban Pesach, you should just know. Don't cook it in water. Because water in some way represents taiva. It represents indulgence. Don't cook it in water. You should know that when you eat the Pesach, this is an exercise. You're going to engage in an action of physical indulgence, but that physical indulgence will be for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's so interesting that the Gemara in Nazir, he brings down here, on the very Pasuk, at the end of Hosea, it says, Yisharim Darkei Hashem, Tzadikim Yalchu Boi, Bam, Upoishim Yikoshlu Bam. That means, Yisharim Darkei Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straightforward. Tzadikim Yalchu Bam, the Tzadikim will go, they'll actually be able to travel, they'll progress in the ways of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Upoishim. What's a Poishaya? Those are deliberately sin, right? The sinners, Yikoshlubam, they will stumble on that. What does that mean? The Gemara gives several different examples. It goes through several different examples of situations like that. But the first example that the Gemara gives, even though the Gemara ends up falling off from it, but the example that the Gemara gives is Shnayim Shatzolu Karban Pesach. Two people roast the Karban Pesach, and one of them eats a L'shei Mitzvah Zavayi Zara. Sorry, L'shei Mitzvah. When he eats it for the purpose of the mitzvah, that's his intention, then tzadikim yochubam. That's what it means, that the tzadikim go in their ways and they actually grow, they earn tremendous merit. The other one eats it to be a glutton. So two people doing the exact same action, but one has the intention for a mitzvah and one has the intention for indulgence or self-indulgence. And one will be Yelchuba, he'll actually be able to grow from it. And the other one, they'll both grow, just in different ways, one spiritually, one physically. Yeah, it will go to waste. W-A-I-S-T. Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, but what I wanted to say here is an unbelievable thing. There is a rabbi here in the community who was part of the Kollel, Rabbi Srili Schwartz. He should be well. His father wrote a book. What was the book? The book is called Air Miles to Heaven. Have you ever heard that book? You have the book? Why did he write the book Air Miles to Heaven? He analyzed life, and he said, you know, there's so many things that we do in life that if we would just focus slightly, adjust our focus slightly, we could change the activity from something either mundane or negative and change it into a positive. The same way when you're flying on the airline anyway, you're paying the fee and you're taking the time to go anyway, right? Might as well along the way earn air miles, right? So it's a fringe benefit, especially in the midst of tzitzis. Yes, good, good, good. So, sorry about that. So what you could do is, all you need to do is sign up for the air miles, right? You're going anyway, just sign up the account and you can get it. Adjust slightly, that's the point, right? So there's many things that we do. So the book was written to describe ways that you could adjust things that we do in life and thereby change it into a mitzvah. It's not just air miles. You can actually change the whole thing into an entirely different activity. I'll give you an example. I once heard many years ago a tape from Avigdor Miller. Avigdor Miller was a wonderful, wonderful leader in Klal Yisrael, a Rav in New York. He actually had tremendous influence on my father-in-law's family. My wife's grandfather, Eiser Pinchas Gewurz, Zecharina Levracha, who my Bechor is named after, he was a mespal in the shul and very much followed Rabbi Avigdor Miller through wherever he moved to follow Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Rabbi Greenspan, I believe, is a Talmud of his as well. He probably quotes him fairly often. In any case, he said, you're going to a wedding, you're going to go into the middle and you're going to dance. Now, some people are not natural dancers. I go into the middle if I have to dance. I'm mortified, and so are the people watching. But there are some people that enjoy dancing, and especially if they're athletic and they can carry themselves well, they can dance beautifully and they enjoy it. People are giving them attention, etc. I says, stop for a moment and think. What are you doing? You're doing it for attention, or you're doing it because there's a mitzvah to be mesameach chasam v'kala. All you need to do is adjust a little bit. And you've changed the action from a negative thing into a very positive thing. Just a slight nuance in the way you're approaching the activity. So that's what he's saying here. Jewish people, you're going out, here's a mitzvah, this is the mitzvah that's going to teach you that you could take the mundane and change it into something beautiful. And that's precisely, interestingly, the first example that the Gemara gives about that pasuk. That the very same action could be used by a tzaddik, could be used by a rasha in two different ways, two opposite ways. The very exact example is the Karban Pesach. And then he says a beautiful thing. He says, but because of this, he says, that's why it says va'amartem. The pasuk says va'amartem when the boy asks you a question. Va'amartem zevach pesach hu l'Hashem. You shall proclaim. This is a zevach pesach hu l'Hashem. This is a carbon pesach to Hashem. Now, the truth is we don't have very many mitzvahs where we have to proclaim. We make a bracha for the mitzvah, but we don't proclaim this is such and such. Right? Here you have va'amartem zevach. By the way, this is a zevach. Now, the truth is if you follow the chronology of the psukim there, basically what's happening is the child is asking you and you have to make a statement. And part of it is because the Mefarshim explained that the child is sending a negative message. He's ridiculing somewhat the mitzvah. So you have to respond to that by saying something very emphatically and saying a beautiful idea. We'll get to that in a moment. But there is this concept of stating, of proclaiming Pesach Hu L'Hashem. Well, why? Why here by this mitzvah of other mitzvahs, you take a lulav and esrog and say, these are my arba minim. There should be a proclamation to make. We don't find such a thing. Why? Why here? He says, because the lesson of this mitzvah is that you could take the very same action and use it for the wrong thing or for the right thing or even for a neutral thing. Make a statement. Make a statement, and that proclamation will be the way you declare that what you're doing now is for the purpose of the mitzvah. B'zeu shomer ha'kosev, says the Noyam HaMitzvah, is v'amartem zevach pesach hu l'Hashem. I'm at number three there. Underlined by the v'amartem zevach pesach hu l'Hashem. Tahaynu sheyomer b'peh mole. He should say explicitly, hineni oichel l'shem mitzvah achilas pesach l'shem shemayim. I'm doing this l'shem shemayim. And today there's a minhag by many in Klal Yisrael. There's also a minhag by many in Klal Yisrael not to say it, but many people have the minhag to say hineni muchanu mezumen before they do a mitzvah. Hineni muchanu mezumen l'kayem mitzvah. Right? I am prepared now to do this and this mitzvah. Says he, number four, umizeh nuchal lilmaid, and from this we could learn shekol ma sheyoichal v'yishta. Anytime a person eats or drinks, yoimar, he should proclaim sheyoichal kedei lechazek es gufay, that he's eating simply to strengthen himself. La Avodas Hashem Yisbarach, for the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ooh, you should do that for everything you do. You know, there's a minhag that many people have in my father-in-law's family. There's a minhag to eat the first bite of food that you eat on Shabbos. He says, L'kovet Shabbos Kodesh, in honor of the Shabbos. Eating a nice piece of salmon, you're eating a nice, some nice chopped liver with pickles. Yeah, Givaldig, you're enjoying it, right? So instead of just indulging, okay, and having in mind, even if you have in mind, make a statement. Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. Now, we're going to have to stop here. There's a lot to say about this. But the bottom line is that we're going to talk about this concept of channeling one's thoughts in a particular direction, and that could spell the difference between doing it in a okay way or doing it in the best possible way, etc. But we'll leave that, Bezat Hashem, for tomorrow.